This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to Enterprise Biz Bytes with me, Rich Bradbury, and of course the wonderful Audrey Raj.
Hello, good afternoon.
We've got DJ Arvin on the decks over here as well. He's with us all the way through to the end of the show. Now, yesterday we gave you a story about Bill Gates' reading list and about how it's a bit more cerebral than some of the stuff he's done before.
Okay.
Today we're kind of leading with another story about Amazon, or related to Amazon. Of course, it's a place where you should be able to order books in Malaysia, but you can't, sadly.
Boo.
Unless you have a proxy, right? But we have got stories about Google and NASA, British Airways, and some local entrepreneurs a little bit later on.
Yes, but okay, let's just kick things off with that story on Amazon. But first, let's rewind a little to 2013 when Amazon CEO Jeff Bezos used a 60-minute segment to demonstrate his company's newest innovation, a drone that he said would be capable of delivering packages to a customer's doorsteps within 30 minutes of an order.
I remember that. It was pretty cool, right? And everybody was like, that's going to be awesome.
30 minutes. It's quite impressive.
Yeah.
Most of the time, I can't even decide if I'm actually going to buy something in 30 minutes. So this is great. But here's the thing. I mean, 4 years later, you know, the so-called Amazon Prime Air has yet to get off the ground. Regulations on commercial drone use have caused Amazon's basic problems. Mm. And approval of the delivery system will likely take at least a few more years, it seems.
Yeah, they're giving him hassle, aren't they?
Yes, they are.
Well, that's not the case in China, where an Amazon clone called JD.com already has a fleet of dozens of drones that have carried out thousands of deliveries in the outskirts of Beijing and four other provinces. Their drones actually started flying last year, and the company is already planning to massively expand the size of its fleet and a number of delivery routes. So this is in the northwestern province of Shanxi, and JD.com have just gotten a sign-off from the government to roll out heavy load drones that can carry a payload weighing more than 1 ton. I don't know if I like the idea of a remote-controlled vehicle flying around with a ton of goods on it.
Over your head.
Over your head.
So, like, what is a ton? Like, how much does a car weigh?
It's a lot.
But a ton is still,
I suspect that the engine of a car is around a ton, something like that.
So how big would these drones have to be?
Huge.
Right?
Yeah. But the interesting thing is, right, Shanxi, its capital is Xi'an, which actually used to be the start of the Silk Road.
Mm.
So there you go.
Things
go around and come around again.
Okay, so JD.com's drone program functions differently than the one Amazon hopes to enact, though. So the company is not using the drones to deliver goods to people's porches. Instead, they automatically fly along fixed routes from warehouses to special landing pads in rural villages, where local contractors for the company can then deliver the packages to the customer's doorsteps.
Mm-hmm.
And these large capacity drones that the company is developing could also take food from rural farms to urban warehouses as well. So there's potentially, should they decide to, a humanitarian angle to this too.
Good. So now drones are not the only realm in which JD.com appears to have surpassed Amazon. The company claims to have built the fastest delivery system in the e-commerce world and says 92% of the orders placed by their 200 million plus users are delivered on either the same either day they are placed or the following day. That's staggering.
Yeah.
And of course, an Amazon representative declined to comment on how its own delivery stats in the US compare, but its default shipping options are slower. Of course they declined.
Of course. How am I going to explain that? Well, JD.com's speed in China is a useful reminder of the fact that while the Chinese tech industry is often criticized for simply copying Western technology, it's also beginning to make some serious innovations of its own. That's in no small part because of the Chinese government's involvement in economic life.
Mm-hmm.
So JD.com's business model is basically the same as Amazon's. It stores a vast assortment of merchandise in giant warehouses and then delivers things to customers who order them online. But JD.com CEO Richard Liu has gone significantly further than Bezos in building out the company's delivery process.
Yeah, they don't use the postal system or third-party shipping companies. It delivers everything itself using its own personnel and trucks. Amazon have invested in its own delivery truck fleet in recent years, but it still relies on the US Postal Service and stuff like FedEx and UPS and whatever. Now, the JD.com's control of the delivery process has sped things up to the point that this company has recently moved into delivering highly perishable food. People can use it to order high-end beef that they expect to eat the next day. And that's something that we kind of heard about over at the Rocks conference the other day. There's not enough delivery trucks here in Malaysia to cope with the demand. And until that's resolved, there's always going to be a bit of a backlog, and we're unlikely to get any same-day delivery anytime soon, you know, unless it's from one of those little guys on a little motorbike.
Yeah, but one of JD.com's major weaknesses has been its inability to quickly deliver items to customers living in rural areas that can only be reached by driving on dirt roads and winding mountain pathways. So deliveries in these underdeveloped rural areas can cost up to 6 times more than city trips. So that's a major obstacle. So that's where these drones help tackle the problem. They saw over poor infrastructure in a fraction of the time and can reduce the cost of delivery by 70% or more. The drones automatically fly along certain paths and don't require individual pilots. Instead, one person can monitor the flight paths of many drones simultaneously, kind of like an, what do you call those, air traffic controllers.
Awesome. Now, we know that Amazon tried moving into the Chinese market by buying Joyo.com, which was back then China's largest online bookseller. That was back in 2004. Now, had it got traction and expanded, Bezos and Amazon, of course, could have potentially achieved the kind of near-monopoly status in China that it enjoys in the US, and perhaps prevented the growth of JD.com and other challenges. Of course, that didn't happen.
Yeah, that didn't happen. Amazon holds less than 1% of China's e-commerce business, and it's been at that low for quite a long time.
Yeah.
A part of that is because Amazon couldn't move as nimbly as its local competitors and didn't fully understand the nuances of the Chinese market. Its ventures into e-books also were ill-fated, for example, because of the prevalence of pirate e-books, which meant that consumers were just unwilling to pay for them. And then when it tried to move beyond selling books in the Chinese market, it developed a reputation for being more expensive than the other big e-commerce players.
Right. But one of the other elements, of course, is for their poor performance is related to the failure of most Western tech companies there, you know. Endless spools of government red tape designed to strangle foreign competitors. Chinese regulators and censors have a long history, believe it or not, of harassing and slowing the advance of not just American tech companies, but, you know, other Western tech companies as well, especially when there's a domestic counterpart that would suffer from their rise in China. Yeah. You know, Amazon's no exception.
Yeah, and in the U.S., constraints on the use of commercial drones come from the federal government, and these restrictions are not an entirely bad thing, you know. The prevalence of drones in U.S. airspace raises huge questions about public safety, privacy, and the potential for unprecedented surveillance in America. Even the Federal Aviation Administration drags its feet a bit longer than it needs to. It seems better to err on the side of caution than to make a rushed and perhaps short-sighted decision on this.
Right. In the meantime, then, JD.com and China in general will plow ahead with drones more quickly than the US. Whatever you think of their strategy, it's more than just a copy and paste. Moving on to our next story, we should get through this quite quickly. We sometimes take for granted just how important it is to keep computers running in an airline industry, and British Airways have felt the painful reality of a computer meltdown that grounded thousands of British Airways flights over the weekend that may have cost them more than $100 million.
How many zeros is that? A lot of zeros. So basically, British Airways cancelled all Saturday flights from London's two biggest airports following this tech meltdown. The outage was apparently caused by a power surge that affected messaging across the airline system, and there was no evidence that hackers were to blame. However, more flights were scrapped on Sunday, and long delays and some cancellations continued well into Monday. BA said 75,000 passengers had been affected.
I love that. There's no evidence that hackers were to blame. It's not our fault. It's somebody else's entirely. You know, blame them for it. It's nothing to do with us. In short, it was a logistics nightmare for the airline. I mean, can you imagine having to re-coordinate 75,000 passengers?
No, that's just crazy.
And to make matters worse for BA, I mean, the cost of compensating passengers, the refunds, the additional staffing, lost revenue, could total somewhere between £80 million to £100 million. So that's between $102 and $138 million. And this is according to this fella, Robin Bide, who's an aviation analyst at one of the bigger companies, Cantor Fitzgerald.
And another analyst at Davy Research said that a one-day outage cost the company about £30 million in lost revenue alone. The main cost will be compensations, of course, depending on how many people claim it. My guess would be that it could reach around, what, £50 million? euros, that is. And passengers on flights operated by European airlines to and from countries in the European Union are entitled to compensation of between apparently 250 euros and 600 euros each, depending on the route. And most passengers on BA flights cancelled over the weekend should be eligible for this compensation. So big money there.
And you know they'll want it.
I'd
certainly want it. You know, if I've been stuck in an airport for way longer than I should have done, I'm getting my money's worth.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, it's not just direct competition compensation these companies need to worry about. When you're publicly listed and you're hit with a PR mess like this, shares are bound to take a hit as well. And that's exactly what happened.
Yeah.
Shares in BA's parent company, IAG, fell 2.7% on Monday. Good news for them, then, is the outage is unlikely to have a lasting impact on BA's revenue. The airline probably lost about £4 million in operating profit a day during the outage. In contrast, it made almost £1.5 billion in 2016. So while this is a PR nightmare and a huge inconvenience for passengers, the market almost doesn't care about events like this. It's likely to be treated as one of those, it's just a blip.
Yeah, and we've seen this happen before, right? Airlines are in that position where they've sort of monopolized the sky, for lack of a better term. There's really no other way to travel those distances unless you want to spend days on the road, if wherever you're going is accessible by land from where you are. Otherwise, you're just going to have to hop on a plane and go about your day.
I mean, let's just look at United Airlines, right?
Ah,
violently dragging a man off a plane. But how many people do you think boycotted that airline or took any serious action against United, right?
Mm.
It's practically unaffected because there's no real alternative at the moment. Like you say, they have monopolized the skies. If United is the closest, cheapest airline, you're going to hop on one, even if they could potentially physically fight you once you board one.
That is true. Well, Elon Musk, if you're listening to us, get working on that Hyperloop pronto, okay?
Please.
I don't know, I find that Hyperloop scary.
It is a little scary, yeah.
Yeah, but, you know, maybe we need it. Anyways, BA is not the only major airline to suffer a major system collapse recently. Delta Airlines and Southwest Airlines both had similar issues within the last year. And while both were very inconvenient for passengers, they didn't have a lasting impact on the company's stock price. So Delta was hit by a global computer outage that caused days of travel chaos, including about 2,000 flight cancellations. This happened last August. Southwest Airlines cancelled more than 1,500 flights following a system failure in July.
Long story short then, make sure your computers are up and running, especially if you're an airline company. We're going to take a quick break with some music. We've got a little bit of Curtis Mayfield coming up with Superfly. We're going to have a look at some messages. And when we come back, we'll be talking about Google being accused of underpaying women.
Ha.
Say it isn't so, Google. Say it isn't so. This is Enterprise Biz Bites with me, Rich, and of course, Audrey Raj, BFM 89.9.
Bankers, financiers, and moneymakers, BFM 89.9.
Welcome back to Enterprise Biz Bites with me, Rich Bradbury, and Audrey Raj. The voice you just heard then, of course, was DJ Arvin, as he's letting us know that we're back on air. Right, anyway, speaking of massive companies that have experienced a few difficulties at the moment, The Guardian have reported that Google, God as Jeff calls them, is not only being accused of underpaying women, but also trying to block media coverage about this potential gender discrimination.
And they're in the position to do that, right?
Right.
Yeah, so trouble for Google. If you haven't already heard, Google has apparently refused to compile and hand over government-requested salary records.
Ooh.
Yeah, which has led the U.S. Department of Labor to accuse them of hiding those records for reasons of gender discrimination. So this is the background on it. Google officials have even testified in court in order to defend their decision not to comply with the demand for wage data. And their main argument is that it would take up to 500 hours of work and 100,000 to compile and organize the data. But aren't they Google?
Right.
Can't you just Google this?
Right. How many people work for Google as well? I mean, come on, really? I mean,
rubbish.
It's absolute rubbish. Absolute Google, what are you doing? Okay,
cost,
surely next to Google, that's next to nothing. I mean, cost-wise, I mean, Google's what annual income is close to $28 billion US dollars.
Mm.
They've just announced their $150 million investment in diversity initiatives as well.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah, so that's the point being made, right? And this attorney for the Department of Labor, Ian Ilyasov, I don't know how to pronounce his name, but he's been quoted as saying, and get this, Google would be able to absorb the cost as easy as a dry kitchen sponge could absorb a single drop of water.
This man's a poet. That's beautiful. I really like that. I mean, what a statement. All right, and so poetically put, of course. Not to mention, isn't Google required to comply with, like, equal opportunity laws and that kind of stuff?
Yeah.
So the Department of Labor even filed a lawsuit against them in January because they refused to provide salary history.
Yeah, and the Department of Labor first publicly accused Google of systemic compensation disparity. This is back in April, based off a 2015 snapshot of salaries revealing pay disparities. So this has been an issue for quite a while now.
That's like one of those companies where it says, don't tell people what your salary is. Don't discuss salaries. You know, that becomes an issue within a company.
Yeah.
It eats away at it. Well, according to the article, of course, one of Google's attorneys has claimed that the company has worked 2,300 hours and spent nearly $500,000 to comply with the government's demands, as the process of compiling data for the DOL has required engineers, lawyers, and employees across departments. Hang on, are they not filing this with HR? This is how much they get paid? My word. You know, they've got to conduct extensive quality reviews of files, redact documents, complete other complex tasks. Something just doesn't seem to add up, right? And they're also very strongly denying any claim of gender discrimination and arguing that the data request violates the privacy of employees.
I don't know. It's pretty tough to figure out what's actually happening here.
Right.
Google's director of compensation has admitted in court that salary disparities do exist, but that, and I quote, there would be convergence over time to match salary disparities eventually. But it's a case that is still ongoing, and the tech industry isn't exactly known for its gender equality at the moment, with Google being one of three Silicon Valley firms to face discrimination claim-related lawsuits from the Department of Labor over the last year. Mm. We can only hope for further progress, I suppose.
All right. Interesting that you mentioned progress, as our next story is all about pushing the boundaries of the final frontier. Of course, we are on Enterprise. When we come back, we'll discuss the possibilities of solar exploration. Some music up next. It is The Beatles with Revolution on BFM 89.9.
Bemused football managers. BFM 89.9.
Welcome back to Enterprise Biz Bytes. I'm Rich Bradbury with
Audrey Raj.
So tomorrow, apparently, is going to be a big day in space history because NASA is going to hold a major press conference.
That's why, because NASA's going to hold a major press conference.
It's going to be the first ever mission to, get this, touch the sun.
Have they gone completely bonkers here?
I'm just wondering if this is one of Trump's things, you know, like, you know.
Who cares about the moon?
Right, exactly. We want to go further. I'm going to touch the sun. Sorry, Americans, I do apologize. Anyway, moving on. Go on.
Well, this press conference is technically on Thursday, early in the morning, so hopefully we'll get some updates on Thursday's Biz Bytes. You'll be with Jeff, right? I'm sure he's going to want to.
Of course he's going to want to talk about it.
He's going to want to talk about it. Well, but we do have some info already about this Solar Probe Plus mission. The spacecraft is set to take off in the summer of 2018 and will be tasked with collecting data about the mechanisms that heat the corona of the sun, which is the outer most part of the sun's atmosphere, if you're wondering.
I'm just glad you clarified that for me, Audrey. Thank you. What's even more interesting is the corona is behind the solar wind, which is a constant stream of charged particles that can impact life on Earth. Getting here is going to be a step closer to understanding our universe.
Right.
So they tell us.
Yeah. So NASA says the corona is within 6 million kilometers of the sun's surface, and the spacecraft will face heat and radiation, of course, unlike any spacecraft in history. And the spacecraft will explore the sun's outermost atmosphere and make critical observations that will answer decades-old questions about the physics of how stars work. So this is just, if you think about it, it's mind-blowing stuff. If you're in this spacecraft and the glowing sun outside your window, and somehow through some sci-fi tech you don't feel any heat and have a special vision helmet to see out the window, Just imagine what that view would look like. Am I beginning to sound like Jeff here?
No, but it's almost like as if you were to have wings and you could float around above something, almost, kind of.
Yeah.
Right? Anyway, the spacecraft will have to withstand temperatures of up to 1,400 degrees Celsius, which it plans to do with the help of an 11.5 centimeter thick carbon composite shield. This is definitely a Jeff story, you know? this, however, isn't the first time we're trying to head to the sun. In 1976, year I was born, just to let you know, okay. Before you start mocking me. A 370-kilogram block of instruments called Helios 2 came within 43 million kilometres of the sun's surface on its mission to study solar winds and cosmic rays.
You know, they say this like it's an accomplishment, but it's still 43 right. million kilometres off the sun's surface. And, okay, we know how powerful the sun is, so maybe it is kind of a big deal. Okay, let me just get back to this. Now, with modern sci-fi technology, NASA is hoping to get even closer to just 6 million kilometres.
Oh, and, yeah. just 6 million kilometres.
And be even more closer to the sun, maybe for a selfie or some. No, that does not make sense.
No, it doesn't, no.
No,
anyway,
not at all.
The probe, however, will swing past Venus 7 times over the course of 7 years to fine-tune an orbit that will take it there. So think of it like a shot put throw.
Ah.
Spins around 7 times and boom, off you go.
So how is the spacecraft going to do this? Well, the spacecraft is going to cost about $1.5 billion, which, come to think of it, is much cheaper than building the wall, which could cost up to $67 billion a year.
Wow!
You could send so many spacecrafts to the sun. Anyways, okay. So the heat shield is obviously the most important feature of the spacecraft, and like you said earlier, it's 11.5 centimeters thick carbon composite shield.
And it's the carbon composite that's allowing us mankind to push through those boundaries. Carbon is the form of materials like nanotubes and graphene, which have already revolutionized our ability to probe light enough to launch, and yet tough enough to withstand insane heat.
Yes.
What was that fellow who flew too close to the sun? Icarus, right?
Is it?
Yeah, his poor little wings, they melted. Anyway, in addition to the heat shield, the probe...
The carbon wings.
That's right. Yeah. In addition to the heat shield, the probe will use an active water circulation system to help protect instruments that will measure the corona's electric and magnetic fields, electron temperatures, and plasma density. It sounds like I'm talking from a hospital brochure. this to me, Arvin, this sounds like a game like, you know, what's that game? No Man's Sky. Remember that one? Yeah. Arvin is nodding.
Yeah. Okay. And there's also an imaging system to take a few photos of this holiday as well. Holiday. Understanding the sun, according to experts, will be crucial if we really want to have humans explore space more, including working and living on Mars. Another ongoing astronomical mystery that's out there is the question of corona's odd temperature. The sun's photosphere is a touch over 5,500 degrees Celsius, just like I like my air conditioning to be. But the corona which is away from the sun's, which can soar up to several million degrees Celsius.
I mean, that's fine. I mean, they're, 43 million kilometres away? Maybe seven if they get closer.
6 million. They're trying to get to six million. That's where the corona is.
All right, okay. Well, if you're a fan of solar astronomy and want to check this out live, head over to solarprobe.jhuapl.edu. We'll have that for you posted somewhere. There's a countdown there with full info. We've got to take a very short break right now. You're listening to Enterprise Biz Bytes with me and Audrey. A bit of music for you. It is sunny, of course.
Sunny.
It's Boney M.
Nice.
Brilliant Financial Mentors. BFM 89.9.
This is Enterprise Biz Bytes with me, Rich Bradbury, and...
Audrey Raj.
And the fellow at the desk is...
DJ Arvin.
For now. We need to find him a different name, you know. If you have a suggestion, please do tweet us at BFM Radio for Arvin's new DJ name. He's sat here smirking, you know, and really what he wants is a very cool DJ name. We just need to find it.
I think he wants to be called DJ Ninja, but...
Ooh, DJ Ninja could be pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. He could be here, there, and nowhere. Anyway, so we're a couple of days into the holy month of Ramadan, of course, and somehow every year has a familiar feel here in Malaysia, of course.
Mm-hmm.
The extensive and impressive Ramadan bazaars, crazy traffic, endless invites to buka puasa with your neighbours and friends, and of course a spirit of solidarity, moderation and gratitude with our Muslim brethren.
Exactly, Rich. Just the way you said it. So, I mean, like for me personally, right, the atmosphere during the month of Ramadan has not changed over the years.
At all?
Like, at all. Like, I remember it.
All of your 21 years, Audrey, it's never changed.
Thank you very much, Rich. Mm-hmm. Oh, 21 years. Okay, but you know, like, ever since I was a kid, Like, the Ramadan feel has been the same.
Right.
Every year, right? But one thing is changing, though. The way F&B businesses are looking at the holy month and the opportunities it offers. So, apparently more consumers are turning to digital and social media channels for matters connected to Ramadan and Hari Raya celebrations, and small businesses are lapping it up.
Right. So, let's start with some basics. Your buka puasa spread.
Yeah.
Now, traditionally, most families breakfast at home. With home-cooked meals or something purchased from the neighborhood Ramadan Bazaar, right?
Yep.
But now, there's apparently a spike in demand for these home food delivery services. The NST had a write-up on this, and they showcased a small business called Nurul Shima Home Delivery. Based in Kota Damansara, Nurul Hashima's business is open up to 7 slots daily, according to time and area of delivery. She initially cooked only for her family, like her close friends and whatnot, before some customers were introduced through word of mouth. And the second year of her business, she set up a Facebook page, an Instagram account for food delivery, and boom, the rest is history.
Yeah, Hashima's food delivery service is now known to people from all over the country, apparently. But Hashima still cooks all the dishes by herself with no help.
Wow.
Right? At times, she has to cook 20 dishes for a slot. But this is all worth it, apparently, because during Ramadan, orders double up and reach close to about 8,000. I mean, on normal months, average sales are about 4,000 ringgit. And Hashima says 90% of her orders have come from Instagram. She actually gets orders from Singapore, Indonesia, and even Brunei. It's quite cool.
Yeah, if you're interested, you can head over to her website as well. She's got one, shimafood.com.
Yeah.
Beside food delivery, online sales and traffic also increase in the lead up to and during Ramadan for those in fashion and retail businesses. Take fashion and lifestyle brand Elite Melange. For instance, they sell premium scarves, and they say they are doubling the stock for Ramadan thanks to a spike in demand. Elite Melange was only founded earlier this year, but some of the batches of their scarves I've already sold out, and technology has played an important role in making this happen.
Yeah, the owner, Adlina, said that doing business online can reach more people worldwide and does not need much capital compared to opening a boutique. And from what she observes, the younger generation are also more reachable through Instagram, while the older generation use Facebook. But having various social media platforms has played an important role.
I mean, even Raya cookies have now been sold online, using social media as well. 35-year-old baker Fadli, who runs an online baked goods business called At The Baking Bachelor. That's cute.
Yeah.
He claims 80% of his customers are now from Instagram, and most of his customers are social media friends and followers, while the rest are overseas customers, VIPs and royalty.
Royalty? Yeah.
They buy off of Instagram as well? Interesting.
Why not?
I mean, he's 3 Instagram accounts for his businesses, but all orders are done through WhatsApp for easy reference. There you go.
So Fadli, who was previously a travel planner, started to bake just 5 years ago, and he only used a hand mixer and a small oven and only made simple desserts like brownies, cheese tarts, and something he calls Congo bars because it was just a hobby. His business, however, slowly started to grow through word of mouth, and he now has 80,000 followers on Instagram. He also teaches personal classes and online classes. And get this, Fadli says during Ramadan he can make 5 times more income compared with other months.
Nice to see these little businesses are prospering during this holy month.
Yeah.
Just remember though, don't let your eyes be bigger than your belly. You know, buy the food that you can eat, not the food that you think you can eat.
But I mean, Rich, personally, what do you look forward to when you go to these Ramadan businesses?
I will buy the caramel things, you know, the little caramel slices. I love that stuff.
I just go to see what crazy concoction is created this year. Because I remember back in 2015, it was the Battle of the Rotisserie Chicken.
Yes.
You know, they're on both corners. Yes, you'd see like all these chickens roasting on the rotisserie. And then last year, it was the craze was about the coconut shake.
That was everywhere last year.
Yeah. So I haven't been able to visit a Ramadan bazaar just because of the weather recently,
and the
right?
timing of it as well.
Yeah, but you know, I'm just looking forward to what crazy concoction comes up this year.
I've seen a lot of donuts this year. Something to do with donuts. Anyway, we've come to the end of today's show, and as we like to do at the end of every show, here's a quick recap of the stories that we covered on today's episode.
So we started off with that story on China where an Amazon clone called JD.com already has a fleet of dozens of drones that have carried out thousands of deliveries in the outskirts of Beijing and four other provinces. JD.com has just gotten the sign-off from the government to roll out heavy-load drones that can carry a payload weighing more than a ton.
Scary stuff. We then spoke about British Airways' computer system meltdown that happened over the weekend. Basically, British Airways cancelled all Saturday flights from London's two biggest airports because of an outage that was caused by a power surge that affected messaging across the airline systems. Of course, they're blaming somebody else. However, more flights were scrapped on Sunday and long delays and some cancellations continued well into Monday. BA have said 75,000 passengers have been affected and the airlines may incur a $100 million loss because of this whole fiasco.
$100 million. All right, next up, we covered how Google has been accused of underpaying women. Google has apparently refused to compile and hand over government-requested salary records, which has led the U.S. Department of Labor to accuse them of hiding those records for reasons of gender discrimination. Google officials have even testified in court in order to defend their decision not to comply with the demand for wage data, just saying it's going to take up too much manpower.
Manpower, eh?
And hours. And it's going to cost $100,000.
Rubbish. And of course, we covered the story on NASA wanting to go to the sun.
Yeah.
Well, we tried to cover the story anyway. NASA said the corona is within 6 million kilometers of the sun's surface and the spacecraft will face heat and radiation unlike any spacecraft in history. And the spacecraft will explore the sun's outer atmosphere and make critical observations that will answer decades-old questions about the physics of how stars work. This is just a mind-blowing stuff when you think about it.
And they're going to take photographs.
Yay!
Against the sun.
No selfies or sun freeze.
Yeah. Sun freeze.
Just
make that up,
Rich? I just did right in my head right there.
Good on you.
I know,
All right. And lastly was that story on digital boost of sales for online entrepreneurs during this holy month of Ramadan. The NST had a special write-up on this and they showcased small businesses, one of which was Nurul Shima Home Delivery. Basically, you know, just using Instagram and Facebook, her business is now known all over the country. She even gets requests for home-delivered, home-cooked food from Indonesia, Singapore, and Brunei.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Now, don't worry then. Just download the BFM app if you missed any of this. Available on the Apple App Store for iOS users. Google Play for those on Android, of course. And, of course, the BFM app is also available on Apple CarPlay as well. So, coming up next is the Breakfast Grill replay with Michael Doring, who's the Vice President and Regional Manager for Southeast Asia, Turner International. He was on the show this morning. Turner International has built its reputation around the construction of skyscrapers, including the Burj Al Khalifa, the Taipei 101, and the JW Marriott in Hanoi. Since opening their regional headquarters in Malaysia in 2011, they've taken on the construction of KL118, Malaysia's upcoming tallest building, and a slew of other projects amounting to a total value of $8 billion. Michael Doring talks about their plans in Malaysia and the region. That's coming right up after the 1 p.m. news.
Yep, and that's about it for our show today. We'll catch you again tomorrow. And in the meantime, if you're up for some really good music, stick around after the grill for some non-stop tunes for a whole half hour. This has been Enterprise Biz Bites with Rich Brad.
Really?
Sorry, Rich, it's the tail end of the show. Rich Bradbury, the lovely Rich Bradbury, and myself, Audrey Raj, BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.